The great English poet, Thomas Gray, who's perhaps best known for his poem Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard, wrote once to a friend that he was about to spend the winter reading Aristotle. And this is what he had to say in writing to the friend about the prospects that lay before him. In the first place, Thomas Gray writes to his friend, in the first place, he is the hardest author by far I ever meddled with. Then he has a dry conciseness that makes one imagine one is perusing a table of contents rather than a book. It tastes for all the world like chopped hay, or rather like chopped logic, for he has a violent affection to that art, being in some sort his own invention. So that he often loses himself in little trifling distinctions and verbal niceties, and what is worse, leaves you to extricate yourself as you can. Thirdly, he has suffered vastly by his transcribers, as all authors of great brevity necessarily must. Fourthly and lastly, he has abundance of fine, uncommon things which make him well worth the pains he gives one. You see what you have to expect. Well, I couldn't have said it better. You see what you have to expect if you read Aristotle, but it is, as a matter of fact, an expectation of, as Thomas Gray says, fine, uncommon things which make him well worth the pain he gives one. And in fact, it's important to add that with patience and care, and with the willingness to reread, short passages in Aristotle will easily make sense to you fairly soon, and may, I hope, inspire you to do longer reading, which I think will be rewarding. Secondly, let me repeat the rather obvious point that we'll just be sampling Aristotle's thoughts, both in terms of breadth and depth. Aristotle was an extraordinarily prolific writer and thinker. In these lectures, we'll look briefly at Aristotle's work in logic, at some of his remarks about metaphysics, about philosophical psychology, or as I'll suggest we might also say, theoretical biology, at some of the things he has to say about ethics and political theory and literature. I gave some indication of what these terms, you remember, mean when we talked about Plato, and I'll also explain them more as we go along. But besides writing authoritatively on these more or less standard philosophical topics, Aristotle was a biologist of great subtlety and considerable scope. He wrote long and detailed treatises in natural history. In fact, almost a quarter of the surviving texts that we have of Aristotle are devoted to research and science in the biological sciences. He was an extraordinary observer of animal life and wrote what is still one of the great models of biological explanatory science, even today. And he wrote also about what was the analog of chemistry in the ancient world. He wrote about language, about the physiological details of perception, and about a number of other things. I could go on and on here. The main thing about Aristotle, I suspect, is that aside from being, I think, brilliant and intellectually quite subtle, he was insatiably curious. When he encountered phenomena, whether they were natural phenomena or artificial phenomena, in his own backyard or on the shores of some island in the Aegean, it seems to me that his standard reaction must have been something like, "Hello, what's this? How is it that this came about? Why is it like this? How are we going to understand this?" And this reaction, which I imagine Aristotle having to things that he encountered, was as true for chicken embryology. He has a long and quite extraordinary discussion of how it is that the chicken grows from the tiniest little spot of blood in the egg until it's hatched. An explanation which, by the way, recent time-stop photographs of the development of chicken embryology shows to be extraordinarily accurate. It's as though Aristotle were spending his day, and we know that he did, breaking open eggs at every hour or so of their development and looking carefully to see what was going on. So this was as true, this curiosity, I say, was as true for chicken embryology as for the nature of political organization or how to live a good life, and, as we'll see, for the structure, something as fantastic as the structure of being itself. Well, one upshot of all this is that we encounter Aristotle and people who study Aristotle in a wide variety of venues. In American university life, for example, Aristotle is read and studied in departments of classics, in departments of philosophy, in departments of political science. People talk about him in programs in literature, in the history and philosophy of science, in the history of theology, and in many other places as well. And of course, not just in American universities. It's important to remember that Aristotle entered the West, that is, entered the body of medieval European philosophical literature, through the office of the sophisticated science and philosophy of the Islamic world.